Welcome to Beyond the Chutes, as presented by Parasite Systems. The first full weekend of October, I traveled to Pafford, New York, where Sam and I sat down with Marv Schimmel, Sam's high school wrestling coach. He stopped by for the day. We had a chance to catch up with him, and we learned so much. We hope that you enjoy Marv Schimmel's episode. So we're sitting here today. We're in BTC, Beyond the Chutes, recording studio north. Sam, good morning. Sun is shining. What a beautiful day.
Good morning, Doug. It's going to be an interesting day, and it should be fun and be see a lot of people that I haven't seen in maybe decades.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, we're talking about Brother Mike Swearingen, his 70th birthday party and rodeo reunion. And sounds like a bunch of folks coming in, Sam.
Yeah, hard to believe he's that old.
I know. How did he get that old? That doesn't even make sense, does it?
Not to me, because that means I'm right there, too.
Yeah, we're all moving that way. We're all moving that way. So today we're sitting here, 3 R's of rodeo. Of course, that's rodeo, racing, and wrestling. Talking about mindset, rodeo mindset, and so forth. And today we've got a special guest, Marv Schimmel, wrestling coach, actually Sam's wrestling coach back in high school. So welcome to the show, Marv.
Oh, thank you very much. You talk about being Mike being 70. I mean, I coached him. So how old am I?
So great to have you here on this beautiful morning. And Western New York is beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Color is in it. Mm-hmm. Man, driving up here yesterday, a lot of good color, a lot of very pretty. And you guys have had great weather, so
Beautiful.
That adds to the color, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So give us a little bit of background, all the way back. How'd you get, where'd you come from? Where were you born and raised?
Well, I was born in Pennsylvania, but my parents moved to Niagara Falls, New York when I was about 2 years old. So I don't remember much of Pennsylvania, but as I was growing up, well, first of all, I don't know whether I should delve into this or not, but I had a tumor in my leg that they were wondering why I couldn't walk right and all that kind of stuff. So they took the tumor out. It was in the bottom part of my leg and chopped up a guy's rib and put it in there. So I said, okay, my father was a big sports fan and all that kind of stuff. And he said, well, my son's not going to be in sports.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was about 10 years old when that happened, and I was on crutches for 3 years.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And so it was about eighth grade when I got off the crutches and stuff, and it worked out really well because it strengthened my upper body. And so I went out for football, and I didn't do great, but I was okay, and I could run, and the doctors let me. I guess that was the big thing. So then I went to Niagara Falls High School, and in 10th grade was the first year that they started a wrestling team. Okay, so I went out for wrestling. I remember there were 5 guys in my weight class, and I had to fight through them and eventually became the varsity representative and eventually became one of the captains of the team.
Oh, nice.
All right, so that was that. And then I really loved wrestling then because my father was a wrestler down in Pennsylvania. Where wrestling was king down there.
Yeah.
So anyway, I went to college and I thought, well, I'll go out for wrestling. What the heck? I wasn't really there for wrestling. I was there because I was a chemistry major. Okay. So anyway, I went out for wrestling and my first year I was behind the Suniac champion, the State University of New York champion. Well, he quit halfway through the year, so I ended up being the varsity representative for that year.
Really? The starter? Wow.
Yeah. But I didn't finish the year because I dislocated my shoulder.
Oh, my.
All right. So it goes on and on. And so I didn't really wrestle anymore too much in college, but I still, my senior year in college, one of my friends ended up being the coach right at the Potsdam High School. So he says, well, you want to help? He said. And I said, okay, all right. So I got a paid position as the JV coach there. And I really loved it there. And so I went on and got a job teaching chemistry at York Central School. And the coach there didn't really know much about wrestling. And he had just started the team about 3 or 4 years before that. And he says, why don't you help me? And so I went and helped. And I ended up running most of the practices, and he appreciated that. And so I didn't go into teaching in order to coach, but it just happened that way. And so I kept on coaching and so on and so forth. Okay. Yeah.
And ultimately moved up and became the head coach, I take it.
Well, it only took me about a year to do that. Yeah. Yeah.
And so what year would this been, Marv?
1970 was the year I started teaching at York.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And 72 was my first year as a varsity coach.
All right. And what do you remember about that era, 1970, first real big coaching gig, if you will? What were some of the challenges, or what were you looking at?
I was looking at the physical abilities of the other wrestling teams in this area, because they were very strong and they're physically strong. And I remember, like, Letchworth, they had bodies that were like, holy, these guys aren't human, are they? And so anyway, I said, well, best I can do is just coach them the style that I like to coach. And it turned out that it was very successful. So, yeah.
And how would you describe that style?
I can only talk specific moves here. Like, I was big single leg guy, single leg takedown. And on the bottom, we were stand up team. Okay. That was our first move from the bottom.
I see. Up and out.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And on top, I was a tight waist near ankle, which was very unusual. Most of the teams were tight waist near arms to break the guy down.
Yeah.
But I like tight waist near ankle, and that's what I taught the kids. Yeah.
So maybe you and Sam, would you get down on your hands and knees? Maybe we could demonstrate this.
I might still be there in the morning.
Right. I'd never get up again. Right.
So I'm trying to put this together in my brain. Uh-huh. Tight waist near ankle.
Right.
So as opposed to wrist?
Yes. Yeah, tight waist near arm, wrist, or tight waist far ankle.
Yeah.
You take the hand off the waist and grab the far ankle.
I see.
All right, but it's tight waist near ankle because you think about it, it's kind of because you got your hand and you got your arm up in front to start with, but you got to bring your arm back. Okay, and the natural tendency to do that is to just reach. Okay, but no, that's not what you do. The first thing you do is I call it posting the guy. You take your chest and drive it, get as low as you can on his back and put your weight there. And then it puts weight on his arms. And then you can, and you get off your knees. That getting off your knees is very important. So you're putting your weight on him.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you can just, the ankle's right there.
Okay.
And what it does is it stops, like, I watched the teams around, and most of them were sit-out teams.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if you know what that is, but yeah. Sure. And the first thing they're doing is getting their feet out in front of them.
Yeah.
But you're stopping that. And it worked very well.
Okay.
Against that.
And had you learned to wrestle that way?
Or yes, my coach in high school was from Pennsylvania, and he taught us all the breakdowns. There were, like, I don't know how many of them, but anyway. And that's the one I ended up liking the most. So that's what I did. Yeah.
And you said something as you talked about in that position, the natural move is this,
uh-huh.
But you didn't want that natural move.
Right.
You wanted a different move.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you coach that? Because my natural reaction is to do something very different that you want me to change.
I can explain that, Doug.
Okay.
It was drill.
Drill.
And then drill some more.
Okay.
And then you're going to drill some more.
Okay.
Yeah.
So repetition, real specific, but not a big movement, meaning
right.
Not a big drill from here to here, from here to here.
Right.
Am I getting that right?
Right.
And everybody knew what we were going to do, but we drilled so much that they couldn't stop it. We didn't have a lot of moves in our wrestling room compared to what I went to with Dalen and seen what they did. But what we did, it was, we practiced it perfect and we drilled it and we were very good at the moves that we did do.
And it just becomes natural.
Yeah.
And do you remember seeing that, Marv? You've got a brand new person. They're struggling to get away from the natural move. They've got to do something that isn't natural to them. Do you see kind of a, they understand it mentally. How would you describe when they just got it? You can see it starts to come in and becomes more natural.
I don't know if I could, but actually there's more to it. I don't know whether Sam realizes, but I broke the move down into pieces. And they practiced those every day. I don't know if they realized it or not. Okay, but one of them was the post drill. Okay, you start in referee's position and you put your hands behind your back. Okay, and you get, you know, legally you got to be beside the guy to start in referee's position, but you get back as far as you can, put your chest back as far as you can, and then all you do is just I blow the whistle and they start by getting off their knees and driving their chest into the guy's back. You remember that old post drill, Sam?
Yeah, very well.
Yeah.
And when we did that, it's funny because that's the easiest thing to do there is in wrestling, but the least you want to do. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I never really wanted to do the post because you were thinking maybe the ankle. And even Dalen and especially Colton, they wouldn't do it. It was
right.
And it's so simple.
Right.
It just, what it does is it knocks the other guy off balance.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And now, seeing guys when they, the elite wrestlers, when they get in the referee's position, they'll hit that guy pretty hard when they go to it before the whistle. And it kind of, you can feel it. You can see it, like, get them out of position a little bit. And that, so it is, yeah. And it's, I don't know why you didn't think it. But
yeah.
As life goes on and you grow into things, it's like, wow, that's the easiest thing to get them off balance where you can break them down easier.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Gets the foot in the air a little bit. And
yeah. Well, usually the guys want to grab tight around the waist and grab for that near arm. That's the natural thing to do. But we teach you not to do that. So this is what your muscle memory is going to tell you to do.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing we used to do a lot is spinning. The guy's on his hands and knees, and you take your chest and put it in the middle of his back.
Okay.
Okay, and you stretch your legs out, and then you start going in circles. Okay, a lot of times I had them put their hands behind their back, and you had to keep your chest on the middle of his back as you're going around and switch directions, which is not easy to do, okay? But by like a couple of weeks of doing that, and they got really good at it. And I was thinking about, like rodeo riding when you're doing that, because there's a balance involved there. And it's a result of the pressure between your chest and the guy's back. And it's got to be kind of like similar to staying on a horse or a bull, where you're going the pressure against the horse or the bull, and you're reacting to that, and you're adjusting your body to that position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not only did you do that, but he'd blow the whistle and you change direction.
Right.
And it may be that whistle may be 5 seconds in or every other second to try, and balance-wise, once he said that, that's going to get your reflexes faster and your balance better.
Yeah, and I was thinking, too, you're doing that as a reaction. You're not thinking about it. It's a muscle memory thing. This is what you got to learn to do, and just let your muscles take over and do it. Yeah.
So that, I read somewhere that it takes, and I think this applies to what we're talking about, it takes 21 days to create a habit. Okay?
Yeah.
Doing it every day. 21 days, you begin to create a habit or you break a habit, whatever it may be. So, and what's intriguing is you're teaching something that's counter to what feels natural to them. So there has to be trust in your wrestler. I need to try this out. Mm-hmm. I need to. And at a certain point, they go, yeah, I got it.
Right.
It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And is that through the drill? Is that through in a match where the light bulb goes off and says, yes, he was right?
I think seeing other people make it work would help more than anything.
Okay.
Say, look at this. And I don't know whether we had videotape at that time or not. Did we, Sam?
No.
No, okay.
Actually, towards the end,
Towards the end we did? Okay.
It's so long ago, that was
But actually seeing it and making it work. Like, that's why Mike was, he did it. And he was one of the team leaders when it comes to that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And because it was natural, more natural for him, he could adapt quicker. He could learn quicker.
I think what helped was that he never wrestled before. So what he was learning for the first time was what I was teaching him.
I see. Oh, so okay.
He didn't have to fight off another habit.
Bad
habit.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Without breaking a bad habit, you put a good habit in there.
You learn it right the first time.
Yeah.
And Sam and I were talking about this back then. So we're talking 70s. Sam, you started wrestling for the coach 72?
No, 73? I'm not quite that old.
You graduated 77.
78. So 78, you didn't start wrestling until you were a freshman.
There was nothing junior high.
Nothing.
Mess around in gym.
Right. No.
Okay. And I say no. Mike, after he quit, he started a youth program.
Right.
And we went to one or two tournaments.
Right. And my assistant coach, Andy, he started working with the junior high kids. Yeah. The middle school kids. Yeah. Yeah.
But there was no organized at that point.
No.
And there were sports seasons.
Right.
You didn't wrestle during the summer. Maybe a camp. Were there camps?
Yes. Then? Yes. Yes. Because eventually I used to take about five or six kids to camp. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That must have been after I was.
Yeah. Died. That's when Todd Reed and those guys started. Yeah.
Okay. So from a learning standpoint, you've got a coach that's breaking it down, and this is so intriguing to me. We think of some of these moves as, well, it's a move. You're going to learn the move. And in this one particular move, no, we break it down into smaller bites.
Right.
And it might take 3 weeks to learn how to use your chest to balance on the back of the, right, to understand your balance. What do you remember, Sam, about going in, no wrestling background at all as a freshman going in?
Well, I did have a little because Mike wrestled and I got to go watch him.
Okay.
That was about the extent of it. You wrestled around but.
Nothing organized.
No. Right. On the living room floor, Mike would show us moves on the hardwood floor. And Danny he was good at a standing switch. And that when that hardwood floor hits you in the face,
I was going to ask, broken noses or anything like that?
Broken furniture, probably.
But, yeah, nothing like it is today. And it really, it took you to a level where, okay, now you're trying something and you're a freshman and you're getting whipped every time you step on the mat. And is this worth the squeeze? But in the long run, it was. To give you a little background, when my freshman year, we won one match.
Okay. As a team?
As a team. One match. I don't know if he remembers this, but.
Yes, I remember that.
One match.
Yeah.
And the next year, we lost one.
We lost one. So, and I've heard stories like this, right? What's the turnaround? A new crop of kids coming in? Another year of just experience for everybody?
Well, it was a couple of things. Part of it was luck, because we finally got to where we could fill most of the weight classes, and that helped a lot. Mm-hmm. Because that year we went 1-14 or whatever it was. We were missing a lot of kids during the year, so we had to forfeit weight classes.
I see.
Okay. It's because we lost some matches that we should have won, but people were sick and whatever. So the next year, it worked well for us. Plus, I had this basically the same lineup. And so everybody had experience, and that helped a lot. Yeah.
So in a season, and this, we're drifting into the mental aspect of things, in a season where you're 1-14, how do you help manage the morale? How do you manage your morale? How do you stay moving forward?
Well, I think of the Buffalo Bills. They just got their butts kicked by Baltimore. And what does the coach say? We go to the next game. Don't worry about that one. And that's basically what I did. I said, well, we're just going to keep working and make the things. So look at what we did wrong. Okay, that is extremely important. Learn from your mistakes.
Sure.
And then just kept on going. It says, if you like it, keep doing it. And they apparently, we had a group of boys that liked wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. That's vital, right?
Right.
It's kind of like
very important. Yeah. Very important, right? Yeah.
And he said two things that really relate to rodeo right there.
Yeah.
You got to love it.
Yeah.
It's too much, too difficult if you don't.
Right. Yeah,
definitely the juice isn't worth the squeeze if you don't love it.
Right.
And forget when you don't do well. And that was one of my big issues. I would keep going back, what I do, how come. Yeah. But forgetting and moving on, because it's over. You can't change it.
Right.
And, learn from your mistakes
and
go forward.
So what was your approach with that, Marv? So Sam's wrestling. He's a freshman. And, again, that's maybe harder to relate to than what it is today. Some of these kids start wrestling in second grade, first grade, right? So they are learning things. So when they show up as a freshman, they got a toolbox full of skills. So you're having to balance, and this is so interesting to me, you're having to balance, how can I make sure Sam likes doing this so he wants to get, I've heard stories, my son, when he wrestled, at a certain point, he's like, I'm getting tired of getting beat, right? How do you say, no, we got to go again, right? Or how to dig deep in those moments.
I tried not to dwell on your mental thing about it. I just kind of put it out of my mind so that they would put it out of their mind. And I see Sam's taking notes over here.
Yeah.
I took a lot of notes.
You did.
I wrote a lot of stuff about each wrestler as they were wrestling.
As you're coaching them in a match?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Or I tried to remember it as much as I could
when
I wasn't jumping up and down. But yes, and then I would have, like the next day after the match, I would take each individual wrestler that wrestled there and went over the notes with them. Okay, this is what you did. This is what you should have did. This was good.
Yeah.
But this you have to work on.
Okay.
Yeah. And then on that, I think, I don't know, maybe Sam could say something about that, but I think that was the best part of the whole thing, how they learned and got better and didn't worry about losing, I think. What do you think, Sam?
Well, I always worried about losing because I was good at it. You don't ever want to be good at losing.
Yeah.
But my biggest thing in wrestling, if I beat you, you wouldn't beat me. If I lost to you, I wouldn't beat you. And now that goes back to rodeo in my mindset.
Okay.
It was all in my head. Didn't know it at the time.
No, the results were set in stone and you couldn't change it.
Yeah, it just was what it was. And when I lost to the kid, there was one kid that was very good. And once I lost to him, well, we must have wrestled 7 times and maybe 4 of them went to overtime and I never beat him.
Who was that?
Marcus Phillips.
Oh, Phillips from Avon, yeah.
And one day at county tournament, I took him down, put him on his back, was way ahead. No way he was going to beat me. The only way he beat me was to get pinned, so I had to lose somehow. But not knowing, but in the back of my mind, that's where it was. That's why the mental aspect is so important to me.
Yeah,
I didn't know the things I know now.
When did it change?
Probably not until really going with Dalen and Colton.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's where I got to really thinking about it, because there was no reason to think about it after that. When I rodeoed, I was never pushed to be a world champion. I'm going there. I can beat them if it works. But Dalen had the complete opposite mindset. I am going to be there. When he said to me, we bought a place in Georgia and he was living down there. And he said, I changed my circuit to the Southeast. I said, why would you do that? You'll kill him up here. You'll make a fortune. Mm-hmm. He said, you said I'm only as good as my competition. How do you argue with that?
Yeah.
And then from there, it just snowballed to, okay, I'm going to be the best at everything when I do it. And he taught me a lesson. Okay, if you want to do that, that's what you got to go play with the big fish in the water.
Yeah.
You remember who we used to scrimmage when you were in high school?
Caledonia?
No, not Caledonia. We used to go up in the city and wrestle against the big schools.
Yeah, because you were trying to get better competition.
Right.
You bet.
Exactly. You bet. Yeah. Yeah.
And as a coach, Mark, did that help you understand where your team was?
Oh, yes, definitely. Okay. Yes.
And
it helped them, like, you talk about the mental thing. Before you go out on the mat, do I have a chance of beating this guy? Because they're so, like, when you go to the sectionals in the state qualifier, you start out, we're one of the smallest schools in the whole section. So when you go to the state qualifier, you're going, we're class D, and these guys are quadruple A. I'm like, what the heck? Do you have a chance? But this guy right here, Sam, I remember he went to the sectionals, class D. He took third place in the class D sectionals. Okay, so we go to the state qualifier. His first match is against the division A first place winner. And he beat him.
Oh, wow.
Okay. The next match is the double A first seed. You remember that?
And these are big schools. So
huge schools. Yeah. All right. And he beat them. Okay. This was on Friday night. And then got up Saturday morning and look in the paper, Sam Swearing and on the headlines there. And I go, holy cow. And it was, do you remember that?
Yeah.
And yeah.
The kid I beat was first. He was from Canandaigua and he was picked to win the state.
Yeah.
And the reason I beat him is because I beat him before.
Oh, you had?
Is that right?
I had beaten him before.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So I knew I wouldn't lose.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, I came up, my knee was sore and I was out of shape, and our team was never out of shape, let me tell you. But.
And out of shape because your knee was sore and you couldn't
practice? Yeah, I missed some practices. Yeah,
I see.
That was
the
first week I allowed me to come back to wrestle. And I had beaten him before.
Yeah.
So in my mind, you can't lose to him.
Yeah.
So I didn't. So there you go with it. So powerful.
So what percentage, and Marv, you wrestled, right?
Mm-hmm.
College and so forth, and Sam, what percentage of wrestling is mental?
Oh, at least 90%. At least 90%. Yes.
So I can have all the skills in the world, and without the right mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the right mindset? Is it a positive mindset?
I think the word is confidence, and that's the key word. If you don't have the confidence that you can compete, you're not going to.
Yeah.
You know, you're just going to hold back for some reason or other.
Yeah, and the skills build the confidence?
Yes.
I got to have the toolbox, right?
Well, he was saying before about so many hours of practice and whatever. I think maybe you said it.
Mm.
And I had a saying, and he says, well, you have to practice this move 956 times, and then it'll work against a fish.
And I'll say, so that's interesting. A fish being a good wrestler. So what is the number?
956. I just picked that out of the air.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And it'll work on not a great wrestler, the fish.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Right.
So that's, and again, you better be devoted to the sport. You better love it to do it 956 times and know that's going to just get you to the bottom of the barrel, basically.
Right. As he said,
drill.
Yeah.
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 So how many times do I practice to get where most of the time?
Well, by 956, you're confident. And the other thing I did was I tried to, and it's hard to do in a small school, do it against a different opponent because things change. You have a different body type that you're wrestling against, and the leverage is different. I was going to ask you, when Dan did his standing switch on the living room floor there, how important was learning leverage, and how does that relate to rodeo?
Leverage is very important in rodeo, and it doesn't matter what kind of event. And I don't know in rodeo if it's just like wrestling. It's leverage or using the opponent's, the animal's position to help you. When you're in time with the animal in the rough stock events, that's your leverage. You're hand in the rigging, your hand in the bull rope, your hand on the buckrein, you use that as a leverage point to put you down back in to be square on the animal.
Yep.
Calf rope and steer wrestling, when the animals, if you learn that, how to handle that weight of the calf when it jumps up in your arms, you can do it. It'd be just like a person wrestling. You're going to use his movement to try to help you win.
Yeah.
Steer wrestling, when that steer comes around, you want to hit that nose at the right time to use his weight to momentum.
Sure.
His momentum may be more than his weight to finish the job.
Yeah.
So it's very similar in so many ways. So you do a headlock toss, be like steer wrestling. When he comes around that corner, it's you're using his momentum to throw him to the mat.
Yeah. Yeah. And absolutely makes sense. And in all those examples, calf roping, different styles, different types of calves, heavier calves, lighter calves that kick, calves that really put. So how do you, so Marv, maybe back to wrestling, different body styles. This guy's shorter. The headlock works on a 5'10" guy with me throwing as opposed to a 6-foot guy. So how do you get enough? I know you're rotating with different wrestlers to try to give that, but I've got to have that to put in my toolbox that without thinking, this guy's taller, I need to do something a bit different here.
Well, you're starting out with one important thing is you have to know the opponent. Well, you have to scout him out.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And if you don't do that, how do you plan?
Yeah.
So, and then I would talk to individuals about what you should do differently, maybe. And we've practiced this way now. I can remember one thing vividly. It was, who was it? Doug Hendrickson. He eventually became coach of the team. Anyway, he was in the finals of the sectionals his freshman year. And he had a guy from, I don't know where he's from, but anyway, he had pinned all of his opponents with a headlock. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And I said, well, this guy's going to go out and do a headlock. It's guaranteed. So I took him and he said, okay, now we've practiced countering a headlock. You're gonna do like a bear hug and roll with it.
Yeah.
And so we practiced it about 10, 15 times that afternoon before the finals.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the guy went for it and Doug pinned him in the finals.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah. Okay. That was great. Okay. But again, I'm saying you have to scout them out so you know what's happening. And a lot of time it's what move they are doing so that you can see. That wasn't so much the body type, okay? But that does happen too, all right? Do you remember Dave Slaker?
Yep.
Okay, he had a kid from Pavilion who was like the county champ or something like that. And we were wrestling I think it was the sectionals, and it was at York. So he had to wrestle this guy, and he said, well, this guy is very strong and very fast, okay? So you're going to have to slow him down somehow. So we're going to, with your body type, you're going to use legs, okay? You're going to use the cross body right on him. And he ended up beating the guy using legs because the guy didn't know what to do and just befuddled him. And that was amazing. So I felt very good about that myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this goes back to what Sam was talking about, using the leverage and all of this, and in a perfect run, things happen and it comes together perfectly. But somewhere I've had to pick up that skill. We saw it I think it was Calf Roper in Cheyenne, the calf just kicking, but he just stepped back and he went at it just a bit different. Mm-hmm. And in a split second, he made that decision.
And rodeo and wrestling are very comparable like that because the opponent in wrestling is trying to do things to throw you off your game. So you have to counter what is going on.
Yeah.
And
without thought.
Right.
Exactly. If you have to think about it, it's
too late. Mm-hmm. So how do you, certainly if you've scouted, and one of the things, and Sam and I have talked about this, I watched a lot of high school wrestling. I watched some of these kids when we lived in Michigan go on and wrestle college. And the step from high school to college, to me, is phenomenally large. And one of the things that stood out for me, this was just my takeaway, was at a certain point, they got comfortable wrestling from the bottom. Wherever they were, that was just the position they were in. In other words, they might have gotten, they're wrestling on their back position. And that's just more confidence. Am I explaining that right, Marv?
I'm not sure I'm following it too well, no.
They would wrestle from underneath, best way to describe it. So usually you want to stay away from being on your back.
Oh, okay, that's what they like to do.
Well, just wherever they were, they could wrestle.
Okay.
Just from wherever they were. It wasn't I need to go on defense now.
Okay.
I've seen guys pin their opponent from their back. Uh-huh. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I can remember my own son. If you grabbed him and did something, he would just kind of quit, right? Okay. But eventually he got over that. But it's just experience. Somewhere along the way, he had some success doing something.
Yeah.
But you got to have that success there.
And Sam and I talk about that. When in rodeo, the mindset over the years had been years and years ago, as a stock contractor, my job is to buck this fellow off. And might be his first rodeo. And Sam quickly learned, well, what am I teaching? How are we gonna keep this young man interested in the sport? We've got to be able to put him on something that matches his ability and begins to give him some form of success.
Right, yes. The only thing I can compare to is like we had a JV and a varsity, okay? And if somebody got hurt on varsity, do you take the JV guy and put him in? Well, no. Most of the time the answer was yes, but there are times we say, no, it wouldn't do him any good.
You would just forfeit the match rather than move up because...
Right. It would hurt the wrestler that you're putting in there. There goes the future.
Yeah. Okay. So you were mindful of that all the way through.
Right.
You had a pretty good read on where everybody was in their ability, their skill set, and that sort of thing.
And the opponent.
And as a team, we were kind of blessed with people together as a team. We were extremely talented at the lower weights from 55 down to 155 down to
98 or 96, or whatever it was.
Iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. And we had kids, if you go and watch a tournament or something, a lot of times there'll be one kid that's really good, and the weight class above or below, the other kids are good because they get to wrestle with him and they'll push him. Well, we had like 10 kids that were fantastic.
Okay.
And the kid underneath me was almost as good as me. He could have stepped in and won 90% of them.
I see.
Mazurowski.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. See, he wrestled the kid that always beat me, that ended up third in the state. He wrestled him within 1 point.
Oh, wow.
And that kid, Marcus, came up to me and said, shit, I got to do something different. This kid, he literally almost beat him.
Yeah.
And so that is a huge thing. So with rodeo, get in a truck with somebody that's better than you.
Yeah.
That can help you.
Yeah.
I say better. It don't have to be better, but the mindset that you can talk to and learn these things and talk about what you did, what you didn't do, and figure out how to push yourself at every step of the game.
And today with college rodeo, they're getting a lot more instruction, more rodeo schools around. I'm talking about the competitors today. Back in the day, what the approach Marv was taking towards wrestling, which was, we're going to break this move down into small pieces and we're going to develop the skill to when you put them all together, it just is a natural continuous move. How, or even the Cowboys today, Sam, how can they get with somebody or how can they figure out how to break? It isn't just marking out. I remember from your rodeo school, there was more aspects than just, we'll just mark them out. Does that make sense?
And it's so much more difficult with rodeo because you're dealing with a live animal.
Yeah.
You don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
To break it down. So you got to be more disciplined in your basics.
Yeah. Yes.
So
yes.
With rodeo, because it you don't know what they're going to do. Certain wrestlers, you can look at them and watch what they do and get the feel. And some animals, you get it, but they're animals. You don't really know what they're going to do. So to break it down, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So that's why the basics are so important. You to bet. Go back to the middle, to
you bet.
Stay square, keep your chin down, your balance.
Yeah. And there's ways to practice that without getting on a bronc. We've talked about this over the years.
Yeah. And it's practice perfect.
Yeah.
You can't, I can sit here and say how to do it, but that's just what you got to practice perfect. Don't learn the bad habits.
Right. Yeah. How do you practice it? How do you practice it without having a live animal?
Well, they have.
Do you have the spur board still downstairs?
Yeah. Those are down there. They have bucking machines now.
That
kind of, it's not the same as an animal, but it imitates it and helps you. And working out. If you're doing curls or something, I'd tell the boys to take that weight and use it as a buck rein. Lift that weight like it is a buck rein and do things in your mind, no matter what you're doing that day, do it to help your rodeo event. Loading hay on the trailer. Put them on their square and straight and do it. Get that squareness for riding in your mind. So
you bring up a couple points here that I wrote down while you were talking. One is think about it while you're doing it. How important is visualization before the match? In your mind, as you're lifting, you can visualize. There was a very famous book that came out in the early 70s. What was it? Maxwell Maltz. Oh, gosh, I can't remember the name of it. But it was all about visualization. And part of it was, if I visualize it, the body can't tell the difference between the visualization. In other words, you're building muscle memory and that sort of thing in your mind.
I think after coaching, after Sam had graduated and stuff, I got into this thing that I called Zen wrestling. I say, okay, we're just going to think about this right now and put your body into it and so on and so forth. And we practiced maybe once a week, especially like the day before a match, okay? And I think at the time, I think it was an Olympic year or something. And he said, picture yourself going up there and getting the gold medal. And like, what do you got to do to get there? So, and then that was a mental thing that you had to do, or it would help.
And see, that is something like so important. When I was at big rodeos and I was in a short go or whatever, I wouldn't go look at the saddles. I wouldn't look at the awards. Dumb.
Okay.
Dumb. Go look at it. See what you want to get.
Yeah.
Why I didn't look at them was because, was I scared to win?
Uh-huh.
I thought it was a jinx if I looked at it. Like, no,
yeah.
Go look at it. Make it yours.
Yeah.
Put it in your head. That's going to be hanging on your trophy case.
Yeah.
But complete different mindset from what I had.
Okay. So visualize it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Visualize success, right? What's it look like? What could it look like? What should it look like? The other thing you said, Sam, that stood out is you're putting that bales on the hay rack, staying square and that sort of thing. You're really, to me, I heard the word discipline.
Yeah, I guess it is the discipline of doing it right every time. And it just relates to what does this do to help me better, to help me win when I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you don't think of that when you're putting hay up, but it does.
And bronc riding's 8 seconds. But I heard a podcast the other day. It was on Dale Jr. Download, and they had a driving coach, Josh Wise, on there, who's driving coach, and he said that the discipline doesn't start at the race. It's the discipline of life, to where you're not altering something. It's just part of what you do. So, in other words, I got to change, or I got to do something a little bit different because I'm at a rodeo. No, this is the putting the bales square on the rack and working on by visualization, the discipline mm-hmm. of what it takes to do it. Mm-hmm. And along the lines of discipline, the visualization, Sam and I, we interviewed the bull rider, Dennis Morse, out of Tennessee. Yep. And one thing that he said that stood out to me was, you don't fix something while you're riding. You can't fix your mistakes while you're riding. It's 8 seconds. He said you fix the mistake while you're going to sleep at night, visualizing. Or driving down the road where you can quiet yourself enough and, okay, the bull did this, what would a counter be to it? And how can I get that in my brain? To try to apply a skill, Marv, 956 times on a bull, I think I'm hoping a percentage of that can be done through visualization that helps me build that. Yeah. And we've got to get to the place, I think, that truly the confidence for sure and all these skills need to be able to be drawn on as needed without thought, to your point. If I got to think about this, it's too late. In the bull riding, that's absolutely the case.
Right.
Absolutely the case. And we watched Dalen ride last night, and he can move his body 90% of the bull riders that get into the position where he got out over the shoulder couldn't come back. And right. to him, it's just another move. Of course. And it's like, whoa.
Muscle memory.
Oh my gosh. And a high level muscle memory. And that's always impressed me. I remember at the NFR, second jump, way out over. Oh my goodness, boom. Third jump, he's back in position and goes on wins. So I don't know if I'm explaining that right.
Well, there's two things like last night. Yeah, there was three times he was in trouble.
Yeah.
And every time he came back, he just fought through it.
Yeah.
He just did what he had to do to ride the bull.
Yeah.
And what you're saying with the IFR, yeah, his head was almost on the ground. The next jump, yeah. he was sitting in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's what let him win the world the one year. It was almost the same scenario. And that it picked him right back up and did it. But it is with wrestling and rodeo. You learn so much as you get old. And
yeah. Yeah.
You never knew of the visualization. You didn't know of the mindset that, hey, if somebody beats you can do something different to beat
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
It's got to be so difficult for somebody coaching 14 to 18 year old kids and getting their attention. When Marv would come, we'd all be playing in the room before he came in, and then when he wanted to get your attention, that chair flew across the room and hit the wall. By God, you better pay attention.
No,
but and that's a point I want to get to. When that chair flew across the room and hit the wall because we were screwing off too much,
yeah.
he just got your attention.
Yeah.
Now that I know what he was doing,
yeah.
it was okay. I'm here.
Yeah.
We're going to work.
Yeah.
Okay. But when we go to different, when I took the boys and I took them to a lot of different schools because I knew a lot of the coaches and stuff, like if you had a snow day, Avon didn't, we'd go to Avon's practice because I knew the coach.
Okay. And they'd let the boys in.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Probably shouldn't hear that because probably the schools, it's,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But we did that not just there, but a lot of different Geneseo, for instance. If their practices was a different hours from ours, we'd take them there because in the wintertime, we didn't have a lot to do. But the work ethic, when you go to what we did, and I know this is walking uphill in a snowstorm both ways to school scenario, but with everything kids have today to do, mm-hmm. there's only a few that are going to work that hard to get to that level.
Yeah.
And you see practices that they're coddling the kids to keep them in, which isn't bad. Don't get me wrong, because it's better than going home and playing on their phone. But it's my point is the elite kids that really want to do it, they'll still work and work hard. Dalen's nephew was a two-time New York State champ. that won the MVP
yeah.
at in New York State.
Yep.
And Dane Heberlein. And he, an amazing wrestler. Did great. He lived for wrestling like Dalen did for rodeo. You wouldn't outwork him. You wouldn't out. That was his goal. Mm-hmm. So it all, the kids that really want to do it will put the effort in, but it's a lot of effort. And I see today's world that the majority of them won't do that.
Yeah.
And they don't have to.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to coddle them to keep them in.
I don't think you can really blame it on the kids these days. It's just so many more distractions. And so they have a choice and they take the easier one usually. And,
Yeah, that the easier one. I said I'd never work that hard again for no money in my life. You know,
makes sense. Yeah.
As much as it helped me now, you look at what it did for you.
Right.
But, yeah.
So, what are some of those lessons, that skills, life skills, whatever you want to call it, guys, that you have taken away from wrestling, taking from wrestling and applied not just in rodeo, but in life?
Well, it's discipline for me. It's discipline. You do your basics, you learn it. I knew five moves, you knew more than that, but five moves, and you knew I was going to do them.
Yeah.
And what makes you a good wrestler is knowing what you're going to do and still being able to do it against your opponent.
Yeah.
And
as I talk to my former wrestlers, as they're getting older, some of them retiring, and successful business people. And he said, thank you, Mr. Schimmel, because you taught me to work hard. That's the number one thing. And it's like, okay, all right. Nothing philosophical or anything here. Just work hard and discipline yourself, and it'll pay off.
Okay.
Yeah. And I used to wrestle, so I didn't have to work at home.
There was something. Motivation comes from a lot of different directions.
That's a lot of truth to that. But, our workouts, I have it here, in shape beyond.
I used to tell the kids, if you're tied going into overtime, you're going to win because you're in better shape than they are. Okay. And that was 99% of the time, that was true.
That was true. Okay. And I've heard this saying, I'm in wrestling shape, or he's in wrestling shape. For our listeners, how would you guys describe wrestling shape?
Wow.
You're the coach, but it's being able to go out there for 6 minutes and give it everything you got, you know, and still be able to walk off the mat. I keep going back to Dalen and Colton, but 1 year, Dalen, he lost in overtime. And people might have been in good a shape as he was, but nobody was in better shape.
Mm-hmm.
And he slapped the mat. And all I said to him, I said, if you had enough energy to slap the mat like that, you didn't leave it all out there.
Yeah.
That's all I said.
Yeah.
And that's all needed.
Okay.
I think in wrestling, there's an additional thing to being in shape. Okay, because you can jump rope, lift weights, do all that kind of stuff, but you're at a distance from another person or an animal, like in rodeo or whatever. Because in wrestling, the real wrestling starts when you come in contact with the other person. So you got to learn how to react to the force that he's putting against you. And your muscle memory tells you to do this or do that and whatever. But it's that pressure, that force against force thing that you got to learn.
Okay.
That jumping rope or running around the track doesn't give you.
I see.
Yeah, and that's where the wrestling shape comes in, I think. It's like working against resistance, a moving resistance, a living resistance, you know, something like that. Yeah.
Reacting and balance come to mind when you say that.
Yes.
You know, that chest drill you were talking about, the spinning drill.
Yeah.
Right?
And balance and timing is a lot of it.
Yeah.
Right.
But to be in shape for that, that's not physical. It's the repetition of when it comes along that you need it,
yeah,
you have it.
Right.
Yeah. So how does physical conditioning, or the physical conditioning separate from skill, how does the physical conditioning affect one's mindset, do you think, Marv?
Again, it's confidence. Like, we used to run stairs a lot, okay? And so how fast do you get your feet from one step to the next? And then, and I tried to encourage them to go one step at a time. Don't take two at a time, whatever, when you're going up. You can take more when you're going down, but when you're going up, go one step at a time, because you're building that muscle memory in the legs, and you're also developing strength and quickness. One of the best wrestlers I had, Van Shermer, he was the first six-time sectional champ in New York State. And I think one day, just for the heck of it, I timed people going up the stairs from first floor to third floor, and he was the fastest. Nobody could even come close to him. Mm-hmm. And that was, it was part of it. That was a good part of it.
And that builds the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And Van, he was amazing.
Yeah.
We'd have a game, and I don't know, but I'm sure you've seen it. Like, in the wrestling room, you had a door on this side and a door on the other side. And Van, we'd be all sitting on the mat trying to tackle him. And he could bounce around through there like a halfback going and not get it, And he was a 91-pounder.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was a big guy that you couldn't tackle. You just couldn't get a hold of him.
Yeah. He was the quickest guy I ever coached. He was quick.
And we had, going back to wrestling in our guys, I was only there 4 years, but we had some Van and Jeff and Todd Reed, David Vassiani, the Hendrickson boys, just outstanding group. Jim Mazurowski, under me, would have been varsity anywhere and gave anybody a match in the whole state. But today, things are different, and I think it's so much better for the kids. I believe if we were wrestling today, like they took one person from Section 5 to the state tournament, now they take three. And you could even be two of the same school.
Oh, really?
The same weight class. You don't have, it gives all the kids a more opportunity. And you don't know, but I would have bet we would have probably took seven or eight kids to the state tournament the way it's set up now.
If you'd went deeper. Right. They'd allowed more per
I totally
class.
Agree.
And it's big school and little school. Then it was only one
class.
You wrestled against New York City kids. We had 70 kids graduating in my senior class. Well, you went against 1,000. Just one person was a state champ.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's crazy.
You take Pennsylvania. Wrestling state, they had four state champions, at least they used to. I don't know what they do now.
With divisions.
But now we have two. So,
there's only two divisions in all of New York?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But three kids could go to state. So really, back then, the best two wrestlers could have been in the whole state right there.
In the same
in
school.
Section 5, and a lot of them were. I guarantee you, Caledonia and Henrietta had kids.
Spencerport.
Kids that didn't go to state that would have won second in the whole state because they didn't get to go.
Yeah.
And it was in this, let's face it, Section 5 is a hub for wrestling. It wasn't, it still is. It's changing a little bit now, but it was it's like Attica with the rodeo.
Yeah.
This is a big hub, and you could have two kids that would be the best in the state that one didn't even get to go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So were you teaching chemistry all the way through?
Yes. Chemistry.
And coached until you retired? How did that?
I'm trying to think. Basically, yes, I did. In fact, I coached after I retired.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and you coach both at York High School, or York Central, and Warsaw.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
best year ever was, we had 4 years where we won the sectionals, and one of those years, and I can't remember which one, we also won the county tournament. That was probably the best year in the year that Todd Reed went to the States. It was one of those 4 years, and I don't remember which one. Yeah.
And those 4 years was with Sam's
right
group. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Probably three out of the four. The fourth year would have been the other boys after I graduated.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. There was only three of us were seniors the same year.
Yeah.
Chip, myself, and Randy Ruff were the only seniors. And so they had a lot of power the next 2 years, probably. Other kids I'm forgetting, Terry Berry.
Yeah.
He was very
Lyle.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was some, and they just pushed each other because there was so many of them at that level. So,
and you know, your comment, and I agree with it, iron sharpens iron. Yes. And jumping in with the right kind of mindset, meaning you may be traveling with a champion that may not help you from a mindset standpoint, may not always help you build that confidence, or does that make sense? You can get in the wrong van.
Well, people are self-centered, and just because you're world champion and you get in a truck with the world champions doesn't mean they're going to help you. They want to be at the top of the game, and they might not encourage or let be known what has helped them or got them there.
Okay.
So, yeah, we all want to be number one and stay there.
Yeah.
So you want somebody, not just because they won the world, you want somebody to talk to you about it and how to get there.
Good. That's well said. So back to the best 4 years, and one of them happened after Sam graduated. Did you see a momentum within the team, that the team was building a bit of elevated confidence, or the iron sharpened these guys all the way through? And the mindset became a very, this is the mindset of this team.
I'm trying to think again. The mindset is the confidence. The self-respect. Okay. We put on this York uniform, and it used to be, back in the old days, didn't mean anything.
I see.
But now you see a York uniform. You say, uh-oh. We're going to have a match here. Even schools that never heard of us, never wrestled against us, like up in the city where the big schools are. They see a York uniform and say, uh-oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that made a difference. And the kids knew that. Yeah, they could see it, right? Yeah.
And we got swagger.
Yeah.
The team got swagger. And I relate most of that to Todd Reed.
Okay.
He was very good at his work ethic and having fun, and he just brought everybody in.
Okay. You know? It was funny because, like, leadership on a team, I always said there was just like at least three kinds of leaders. Okay, you got the quiet, work hard leader, you got the raw leader, and you got the guy, I don't know, somewhere in between. And Todd was, I think, from what I could see from the coaching, he was kind of the quiet leader. He wasn't the raw kind of guy, but we had some raw guys too.
Yeah, and Todd was a year under me, but I looked up to him like, wow, this guy will work at it.
Yeah.
And very catty on his feet.
Yeah. It was funny because you go through the records, and how many guys have had 100 wins in their varsity career? Todd Reed was not one of them, okay? Because freshman year, he wrestled behind Mike, I think.
No, Mike would have been out of there.
Okay.
It was somebody else.
Somebody else. He couldn't beat in the wrestle-offs, so he was JV that year. And then the next 3 years, he was sessional champ each year after that. Mm-hmm. But that freshman year, he couldn't do it. So, and I think that helped him in the long run, yeah.
Yeah, when I went to the school and they got the banner of everybody with 100 wins, and I looked at it, I thought, where's David Vassiani? Where's Todd Reed? These guys were outstanding.
Yeah.
You know,
one of the things we didn't used to have as many matches,
too. Right. Yeah. Oh, it's so different now.
Yeah.
100 wins then is like 300 wins today.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah.
So there's that many more matches. Okay.
Yeah. And that was mainly due to tournaments. Because,
like our tournaments were tournament style. Like if you kept winning, you went on. So you might have a 16-team tournament. You only wrestle three times if you make it to the finals. Now you wrestle five times, no matter what, to before they get there. It's different. Like, you'll wrestle every school that goes to a tournament. Yeah. Like, it's almost individual and then the same. There's very few tournament styles anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Warsaw. After I stopped coaching at Warsaw, they had a really good team. They were like state champions. Well, anyway, one day, like on a Saturday, you'd have like three tournaments on the same day. Like, one would be in like up towards Rochester, one would be in the Southern Tier, and one would be like over towards Buffalo. They would send representatives to each of those tournaments. So they weren't planning on winning the team tournament. They were just, which would be best competition for this wrestler.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. And you would split the team.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Now, I wouldn't, but that's the way they did it.
Yeah.
I didn't believe in that. But
you didn't?
No. Okay. Keep the team together. Well, small school.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that's good for us. We can do and help each other, and there's that brotherhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've used a couple words that in rodeo, we always think of rodeo as an individual sport.
Right.
Okay. And now there's team aspects that are coming into bull riding. There's team aspects that are coming into rodeo with Kid Rock and rodeo, where teams are now competing against teams. And watching the shift, and our best way of comparing it is wrestling's an individual sport, and yet there's a team.
Right.
And how important is being part of a team, do you think,
Mark? I think it's extremely important, and especially in tournaments, okay, because the coach couldn't be with each individual after they lost. That was probably the most important time, especially with the tournament where you had to wrestle again because you lost, but you were in the loser's bracket. But the other wrestlers, especially, I don't know how successful I was, get in the wrestling room, we line up according to weight. Okay, now look at the person to your left and your right, okay, closest weight class to you. Okay, number one, you're going to listen for your name to be called, okay, so you don't miss your match. And help each other out and be there to help coach them in case I got three guys wrestling and I got to coach one of them. So the team aspect, especially in tournaments, is very important.
Yeah.
Yes. Actually, in dual meets, it was important too, especially before the match, and you got out there and you warmed up together and that kind of stuff. Yeah. And sending the guy out. Okay, here's something we haven't talked about. You talk about mentally. The wrestling and rodeo got to be very similar. It's like you got to be a special kind of person to want to go out there by yourself, okay, like in a match. Like, I've had people that couldn't do it. You know, like a couple that won the varsity spot and then they didn't show up the day of the match.
Oh.
Okay, I wonder why.
Yeah, you know,
because it takes that courage to get out and be on your own. You know, there's nobody else to help you while you're out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're getting on that bull or whatever. It's you.
Yeah. You can't call for backup. Mr. Wizard. Help me, Mr. Wizard.
No, that was a Todd Reed. Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, and it goes like wrestling. And here I go with Dalen and Colton again. They took out Dalen. And another bull rider that him and Dalen and him are 1 and 2 in the world. And they were so close, very close. And they had him stand up there and blow the smoke and look each other in the eye. And Dalen said, I looked him in the eye and you could see intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy went down the next day. Another guy came up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Kaiki Pacheco.
Yeah.
And Dalen looked him in the eye and he said, there wasn't a damn bit of intimidation in that man. He said he was there to win.
Yeah.
There wasn't any doubt about it.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that really helped Dalen, because when you go in the finals and stuff, you shake the other guy's hand, you look him in the eye, and can you put fear in them? My big thing was right off the bat, try to put a little fear in them right off the hop. And with wrestling with that, it helped him. Colton, and I never realized this, he never won a tournament until his last one.
Okay.
He won sectionals. It was the only tournament he ever won.
Which is a big tournament to win.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize he won it as a sophomore, and then they quit wrestling because rodeo took over.
Okay.
And kind of broke my heart. And one of the things that got me thinking about talking to Marv was they had Dalen on a wrestling podcast and Nationwide won after he won the world. And their question was, how did wrestling help your career?
Yeah.
And he said, I really can't say, he said, but Dad said I'd miss it one day. Wish I'd have done it. And he said, I wish I would have done it.
Yeah.
Senior year. Because,
But
he had other goals. And
he got injured, right? A horse fell on his foot and broke his leg.
That was before the state tournament. He didn't get to go.
Yeah,
Let me tell you, I was father of the year to those coaches that day. Yeah. But, you know, that's what he lived for. And we sat down and talked about it. I said, he wrestles for rodeo.
Yeah.
He doesn't rodeo.
Yeah.
No.
Wrestling
to help in rodeo.
Yeah.
And they understood it. But, you know, when you got a kid that's probably going to be state champ coming from your hometown and he gets hurt because you let him go to a rodeo that week before, because there's a week off between sectionals and state tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that happened.
Yeah.
I believe his seventh grade year, him and his brother broke his finger and it got infected.
I remember that.
I think he would have probably went to states that year pretty easy because he was so light. He was like 105 pounds.
Was that when he was at Attica?
No, he was in Pavilion that year.
Oh, he was at Pavilion that year.
Yeah. So I believe that would have been one of his best years because at that size, he was pretty physical. You know. But anyway, so with that being said, the looking in the eye and the going through the process of one-on-one, I think really helps you in rodeo.
Yeah.
Really helps you.
Yeah.
And I got a couple questions for you, Marv. So you've had a lot of success over the years. A lot of good kids come through there. What was your best accomplishment?
Well, I had to be Todd Reed going to the States. That was probably it. Yeah, as one individual accomplishment. But the other thing I look at is when people come back to me and they say, we appreciate what you taught us about working hard. That makes me feel really good, better than anything.
And when the team was inducted into the Hall of Fame for the
The
York team. Our team was inducted into the
Hall.
I was in Vegas with Dalen at a rodeo, and I was going to be back in time, and the flight got canceled, so I didn't make it back. But that leaves it too. But the other thing I want to say is, before we end, Marv was inducted into the Section 5 Hall of Fame as a coach.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that goes to his work ethic and taking the kids to a level that, you know, let's face it, when you have 7 or 8 kids that could have been in the state tournament as it's set up now, that's quite an accomplishment.
So yeah, it's a big accomplishment.
Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You're making my head swell. I might not go out the door.
We'll grease it up.
And that's what you bring up there, Marv. I wanted to ask, your head swelling and all such things, you can get kind of fool yourself on the wrestling mat. So how would you see that in a wrestler? Back to how do we get him back to discipline? How do we get him back to the basics? And I guess tied to that, to me, learn how to win for sure, but learn how to lose?
I think that kind of goes back to practice. I had a rule. It's like, if you miss practice, okay, you just told me you quit the team. Okay, so unless you have a really good reason, you tell me ahead of time or something like that. Okay. I remember my first year I was the varsity coach. We had a kid that was the county champ or second in the county the year before. Over Christmas vacation, and he didn't come to practice the whole vacation.
Oh, wow.
So he came back, first day school was back, he came back to practice, and I go, well, what are you doing here? And he goes, what do you mean? And I says, I told you, if you don't come to practice and you don't let me know one way or another why, I wouldn't care. It was Christmas vacation. If your parents wanted you to go shopping with them, that's okay. All right, you have a reason and you let me know. But you just didn't come.
Yeah. So, and didn't give notice or anything.
Right. Say goodbye.
Yeah.
And that set a tone for the whole team. They knew he meant it.
Okay.
He meant it.
Okay.
Yeah. And it let them know how important practice was. Yeah.
No, I'm just laughing at that because when that mindset must have really stuck with me, because when Dalen was wrestling and he wanted to go to the high school rodeo in Harrisburg, I said, "You're wrestling. It's in January. You can't go." He said, "The coaches said I can go." "No, you're wrestling. You can't go." Because the mindset was, if you screwed up, you were done.
Yeah. And, yeah.
But how it's changed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talked about conditioning for wrestling. You're not in wrestling shape. Mm-hmm. You miss a week of practice, things change.
Yeah.
The timing and all that kind of stuff. Just, you need it. Yeah.
Very cool.
And we see kids today, and this will be probably the last question I have, but today they wrestle year-round, the ones.
Yeah.
And what do you think about that with burnout and things like that?
The burnout, yes, it's definitely there, okay? Especially with the younger kids. They take them to all these tournaments when they're still in middle school, even in elementary school. You go, whoa, what the heck? That's not good. And I always said, like a small school like York, you could not afford to be just a wrestler, okay? You got to help the school by doing other sports. Like you go out for track, you go out for football. You just do these other things because it actually helps your wrestling because you're doing all these different sports and it's helping your body develop in different ways. And you never know. You may be something really good in some other sports that you're missing. The last really good wrestler I had was Clark. I don't know if you knew Clark.
I've heard of him. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was really good. But he was in the Tri-County Wrestling Club over in Alexander. Mm-hmm. And he really enjoyed that because he got to wrestle. He got to wrestle with a guy from Germany and all this kind of stuff. It was pretty cool. But I said, okay, we'll do this. And I'll even take you if you want to do it. I'll take you because it was in like at 7 o'clock at night and go over there. But all right, you should probably go out for track or baseball or something. And he did. He went out for track. And I said, okay, you got a big meet with your wrestling thing, and you got a track meet. You're going to the track meet. And that's the way it was. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very important.
Well, this has been great. So a couple questions. You got a brand new wrestler coming in, never been on the mat. Think of Sam as a freshman. Never really has been on the mat in an organized way. Knowing what you know today, what advice would you give him? You're not coaching him. What advice would you give this young man?
I'm not coaching him.
You're not coaching.
What, am I like his father or a friend? Or
I say I've got a grandson that be pretty good here, I think. What I'd like you to sit with him. What advice might you give him? He's not been on the mat yet. He's got good athletic ability. He's the right size.
Wow. I've had questions like this before, and they're always hard to answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, well, it depends on your coach, actually, how you react to your coach and your teammates. Okay. Very important. Very important. Try to find people that you can get along with, people that will help you. Try to fit in, and you're going to have your ups and downs. Probably maybe as a first-year wrestler, probably going to have more downs than ups. But just keep track as you're going along through the season. See if you are getting better, not just as a wrestler, but physically getting better, okay? Can you do more sit-ups than you used to? Can you do more push-ups? Are you getting less winded when you're running, okay, and stuff like that? Can you do a move that you couldn't do yesterday? First year coaching at Warsaw, I had a kid who was a senior who was really good. Okay, I think he took second in the county the year before. And we're doing a what I call a head and heel, an ankle pick, takedown. And I was showing him how to do it, and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't think it was that hard of a move, actually. But And he kept saying, I can't do it. And I can't do it. I said, you can say you can't do it, but you got to add one more word. You got to say yet. I can't do it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And he kept working on it and kept working. Because I can remember in the county tournament that year, it was not the finals, but it was leading up to the finals. And he had to wrestle somebody, and he did an ankle pick on him and took him down. And he came running off the mat. And whether he won or not, he didn't care. He said, did you see that? I did the ankle pick. I said, yep.
That's got to be rewarding as a coach.
You never know when it's going to be there. I mean, he said, because the guy was hanging his head when he put his weight on his heel. And I said, yeah, ankle pick is there. And he did it.
What a great example.
Yeah.
That's a cool story.
And wrestling coaching's got to be so difficult because you have kids different levels, but different, like Colton and Dalen were so different. I couldn't coach Colton at all. His body type was so different. He's tall, lanky, and
leg man.
Yeah, it was nothing that I was ever good at.
Uh-huh.
He was very good at ankle picks. He's good at legs. He did what they call funk wrestling.
I couldn't coach that either. So
But Jimi Hendrickson, he pulled me aside one day. He said, "You can't help him. Let him do what he wants to do."
Yeah.
And it was the right thing.
Yeah.
And Jimmy was into that. He wasn't into the funk thing, but he knew enough about it to let him go ahead and be his own person. So here you got 20 kids out there. You got to let them be their own person. How difficult.
How difficult, Mark.
Yes, is that? Very difficult. Yes, it is.
And you've had, no doubt, wrestlers on your team that just so much ability.
Uh-huh.
And just don't, maybe the drive or the interest or, mm-hmm. You've seen that?
Yes, I have. Yes.
And what can you do in those moments, in those situations?
The only thing you can think about is, like, what would make you want to do this? What kind of success do you need to make this valuable to you?
Yeah, those are great questions to ask.
So I want to say to our listeners, when you're listening to the commentators on TV and whatever, you think about some of these guys and just hear how many times they'll give backgrounds on, they were Tim O'Connell, 4-time Iowa State champion, bareback riding world champion, Justin McKee, big wrestler, Jess Lockwood.
Yeah.
There's so many of them that go back, and I'm forgetting the one that was really the best. He's a bull rider and he did outstanding in college, and Dalen wrestled with him. He said, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He said, just amazing. And it's both sports, you have to want it so bad.
Yeah.
Rodeo's a little different now because financially it's getting pretty decent that you can make a living and retire in it. But wrestling, when you're done.
Yeah.
I went to the Olympic trials. I went and watched that because it was in Fort Worth. And I didn't have anything to do. And I said, I'll go down and watch Yakima Hollis from Hilton. He was there. But it's incredible because the Olympics, the pinnacle, of course. And what, 3 guys go from the United States?
No.
In a weight class?
No, only 1 per weight class.
Okay. So here you got 1 person. These guys devoted their entire life.
Yep.
Entire life to get where they're at.
Yep.
And when I watched it, it was, of course, the Greco-Roman, I don't know. But it's all, if you want to be good at wrestling, guys, if there are any young kids out there, work at your feet. Because that's where
Takedowns are the thing.
Yeah. Okay. Work on your feet. And Dalen wasn't real good on his feet.
Yeah.
And whether it's bragging, Dalen said, they can't hold me down.
Yeah.
But he's taking me down. I'm losing a point every time I get up.
I see.
So, okay. I see. What are you going to do now?
Yeah.
Stand up, do your standing switch. Do something to counteract.
You bet.
To do it.
Yeah.
But those guys, it's all about being on your feet is what wins the...
Let me add to that, because I had an exchange student. He actually went to Mount Morris. And they asked me, the principal over there, I said, well, can he wrestle for you because we don't have a wrestling team? And I said, sure. And he was from Mongolia. Uik Bektar Zindui. And he was a cool kid. But he wrestled in Mongolia, okay? So we go out there and we're starting to take downs. He could take anybody down. but he'd end up losing because he didn't know how to hold them down.
Ah.
He'd take them off their feet and put them down, and then it was over. And that was, and it never got through the whole season. It never got through to him. Our folk style wrestling is a matter of control. You have to show control. It's not just taking the guy down. And they say, you're really good at it, but you got to learn to control the guy once he's on the mat. But yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Needed to teach him the bad pony, huh?
Yeah.
I'm sure you did. That's what I used to call tight waist near ankle. So yeah. Nobody knew us that. Hit the ride him like a bad pony when when you roll that shoulder into their back and it really takes the air out of them.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, this has been great, Mark.
All right, thank you.
Really, this
you know
been...
it helped me too because I haven't thought about these things for years. Right. I mean, really.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in Iowa, and there was a wrestler that actually was a town over from us by the name of Dan Gable.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
One town over.
Just one town over.
Yeah, he was my hero when I was in college, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, the Dan Gable story, of course. Yeah. And then we had another wrestler come out of Iowa, Cal Sanderson.
Cal Sanderson.
Now down in Penn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Penn State.
Yeah, I was going to wear my Penn State sweatshirt.
Were you going to wear your Penn State sweatshirt?
Yeah.
But that part of the world, and New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania, hotbed of wrestling.
Yep.
Because you got winter and snow and there's something to do inside.
So are you still following wrestling?
Oh, especially the college wrestling.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And I went to the Olympic trials, but just so happens that I got to go to the NCAAs. We're in Tulsa. So a wrestler that Jimi Hendrickson helped from Warsaw,
mm-hmm.
Sam Wolf, was there wrestling.
Oh, he was? Yeah. Who's he wrestle for?
Navy.
Wow.
So I knew.
Oh,
so
okay.
The boys grew up with him wrestling. So I said, I'm going to go watch Sam. So I got to go up there and watch that.
He wrestled at Warsaw, this Wolf kid. He's
he did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And his parents were very supportive, and they'd take him over there to Jimmy's house twice a week, and they'd wrestle. And I seen his mom at one of the tournaments, and he'd always be in the finals against this other kid. And I said, well, maybe it's his turn today. She said, he ain't beat him for 30 times.
Yeah. Sam Swearingen syndrome.
Yeah. And but then as the kid graduated and things went on, Sam turned into an outstanding wrestler, just good people.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Now, you asked me before, what were some of my things that I look back and were highlights of my career?
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, one thing I coached at Warsaw for 6 years. The first year I coached there, I got a letter or I got an interview with the supervising principal. And he sits down and says, saying good luck or anything to me. He says, points his finger at me. He says, now, you look at the numbers. If the numbers go down, we're cutting the team. And they almost cut the team the year before.
Oh, wow.
And it was Van Shermer that called me up and asked me if I would coach at Warsaw. It took me a week of thinking about it because I don't know. But I eventually did it. And anyway, a couple years ago, they had somebody was inducted to some kind of thing over at Warsaw. And it was one of my ex-wrestlers who went on to UV and wrestled. No, that's not true. It was his son. Oh, my God.
Generations.
You know. So anyway, I go to this thing to honor this kid. And the parents, which would have been the grandparents of this kid, they came up to me. The father came up and said, Warsaw's doing really good. They were like state, as a team, they were state champions in Division II wrestling.
Wow.
Okay, and he says, you're the one that turned this over at Warsaw. Okay, but talk about my head swelling. That was it.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
It was one thing that I kept saying I wanted to do with these boys, because we had Dalen, Colton, Chase, Call, and Dane Heberlein, all cousins. I won at these tournaments. I said, let's get a picture.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'll get one. We'll get one. Well, as it went on, they wrestled each other as in what was all, you know, before it was done, you never got a picture afterwards.
Yeah.
All them years, we never got a picture, all five of those boys together.
Oh, my goodness.
You know.
And,
you know.
Yeah. So
crazy.
Yeah.
You got a picture straight up there.
Yeah.
That's probably more important.
And that's another great point. How to realize what a cool time this is when you're doing it. How to take a moment and just realize how neat that five cousins can wrestle, or I get to do this, or I'm on this great adventure, whatever it may be, celebrating as you go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you don't realize it.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me, you know, we're up at Mike's putting stuff together that the other day, and boy, you got to have a lot of stuff. I didn't keep it.
Right.
I didn't realize it.
Me
you know?
Too. Me too. Yeah,
pictures and that sort of
pictures,
thing.
Got all these pictures and stuff downstairs, and they got dust all over them, and it's like, oh, trying to get the cellar clean, and oh, there's the pictures.
Yeah.
But you got the memories. That's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what a podcast is about.
Yeah.
And sharing the memories.
And for me, every now and then, a wrestler will call me up, like Sam Swearingen. I had some more recent ones, Gray. I don't know if Gray.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
He's in Buffalo, and he's got married, and he's got six kids. He said, well, can you help my wife? She's taking nursing, and she needs some help with chemistry and blah, blah, blah. But also, his son is a wrestling coach out west in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
He coaches a girls wrestling team at college.
Okay.
And they won the nationals 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And so, wow, that's interesting.
Changing, everything evolves.
Yeah.
We said that earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that neat?
I talked about that kid with the ankle pick. His daughter ended up wrestling, okay? And he asked me to talk to her because she... It was like in the sectionals, and she was down, and she was a little depressed or something. So I talked to her, and I told her the stories about the ankle pick and all this kind of stuff. I don't know whether it helped or not, but she went on to college and wrestled whatever.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, all these things come back, and memories.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
You bet.
Well, this was good.
This was great. This was great.
I was nervous. I didn't think, oh, I'm going to say stupid things.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of our podcast with Marv Schimmel. If you do, please share with your friends. Word of mouth is always the best advertising. To make your listening easier, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Search for Beyond the Chutes and follow us, like us, rate us, subscribe, give us comments, let us hear from you. If you like reels, we got reels. Check out Beyond the Chutes Facebook page and click to follow. Thank you to Parasite Systems for their support with our podcast. Parasite System is a push-button parasitic diagnostic system for pasture animals, horses, cattle, goats, sheep, and chickens, and now for your companion animals, your dogs and your cats. Test before you treat. You can find them at parasitesystems.com, and we have a coupon code for your mail-in testing. It is BTC023 for 50% off. And do check out the Rodeo Roots podcast, Rob, Danigan, Blue Jeans. They're recording some great interviews, and you can find them on all the major streaming platforms. And a big thank you. And a big thank you to the IRA Project and the New York Rodeo Museum Facebook group page for all the help that they have given me and advice and guidance. So this is Beyond the Chutes. Until we meet again, this is Doug Simcox. Thank you for listening.